AM 1450, FM 99.3, KNSI's Ox in the Afternoon at 3:08, 8 minutes after 3 o'clock. Good afternoon. Coming up in 1 hour, a candidate for Senate District 10, former Mille Lacs County Sheriff Brent Lindgren joins us. We also have Senator Andrew Matthews at 4:40 today. If we can pull him away from his committee and Senate work at the Capitol to respond to the budget surplus forecast that just came out this morning, amazing amount of money. I think I have a feeling what Andrew or what Senator Matthews is going to say, but that's coming up at 4:40. Meantime, in the news today, maybe you've been following it, something's going on between Ukraine and Russia. The Associated Press ran an interesting story, and I thought we could spend a little time on this out of Brussels. I'm going to just read some excerpts from this story. Within days, Russian President Vladimir Putin has achieved what remained out of the grasp of the European Union for many decades, transatlantic unity. Richard Haass, the president of the Council on Foreign Relations, said it was stunning how European politics have been transformed in recent days. Quote, Putin has done what no one in the West could do, which is to revive the concept of the West. The story says mumbo jumbo, extra verbiage to fill the page. A couple of statistics, a couple more quotes that don't mean anything, and this and that. But the gist of the story was exactly what I just read to you. And interesting point on this, we didn't know, let's face it, and I think a lot of us speculated, and probably speculated wrongly, that Ukraine would just roll over and Russia would roll in and Ukraine would cry foul, surrender, and say that's that. Well, not true. They're holding out long enough, I think, for the rest of the world to really kind of catch up with the whole thing. And now all of a sudden, out of seemingly nowhere, at least that we don't know because we're not hyper-focused on Ukraine, but to us, we hadn't heard a lot about Ukrainian unity. We hadn't heard a lot about Ukrainian patriotism. We hadn't heard a lot about Ukrainian resolve. Did anybody know whether or not they had a bunch of guns like in the United States? I mean, are there gun owners? Are there local militias? Are there local, you know, patriots? Are there local? I don't know what, but we're finding that the ones who didn't have guns are getting guns, and everybody has to report for duty. And all of a sudden, the Ukrainians are putting up a fight, the citizenry, and ready for a guerrilla warfare in the streets. Nobody knew. Nobody knew that was going to happen. We don't really understand the nuances of it all. And I contend that every hour that they hold out, the rest of the world unites behind Ukraine, freaking out Vladimir Putin. So what really is the situation in Ukraine? Do they all have guns? Is this a surprise that they would actually rise up? Should they have been preparing for this and been ready? Maybe we can get some answers. We got one of our listeners, caller Bill, is joining us. Bill is a missionary in Ukraine, has been there recently, and joins us. Bill, thank you for having time for us again today on Ox in the Afternoon, sir.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling me.
Well, Bill, okay. And can you give me a kind of glimpse into the psyche, if you will, of the average Ukrainian citizen? Are these, I mean, is it like the United States where a bunch of them, they have guns? Do they know how to shoot? Do they know how to defend themselves? Are they expecting the rest of the world to fight their battles? Get me into the head of the average Ukrainian, if you can, Bill.
I'll do my best. The thought that comes to my mind is they're a lot like us. They're very different in some obvious ways, but they also have some of the same aspirations that many of us here in the United States have. And I think one of the values that characterize our society is that of freedom, being able to chart one's own course, to choose one's own way. And they have those same aspirations. And that's one of the things that really is characteristics of Ukrainian people. What they're fighting for now is a continuation. This is a continuing battle that they are waging today that was really begun in the fall of 2013 through the winter months into February, March of 2014, in what they call their dignity of their revolution of dignity.
Mm.
When a young generation that was born after the Soviet Union collapsed in early 90s, young people were born and they grew up not in the old Soviet system, but a new emerging, more freedom aspiring system. And these young people came of age in, let's say, mid-2000-teens, 13, 14. And when their government at that time, they felt betrayed them by not allowing Ukraine to become more integrated into Western Europe, which was their aspiration, but in a sense, reneged on that promise he had made, they rose up and protested because they wanted to look like they had the same value, many of the same values as the West has. This did not go down well with the president at that time, their president, Viktor Yanukovych. And eventually he had to flee because of the popular uprising against him. But he was Putin's man. And so Putin retaliated against Ukraine by grabbing Crimea and then launching this proxy war in the far eastern part of Ukraine, right on the border with Russia. That war has been continuing since 2014. It has intensified now in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a continuation of what began in 7-8 years ago in that revolution of dignity. Like all of us, no matter where we live, we aspire to have honest government, freedom of choices, freedom of religion, a judicial system that isn't marked by so much corruption. We all want that. Most societies can't function unless they have those things. That's what Ukrainians want. That's what they're fighting for. And Mr. Putin doesn't want them to experience that for his own reasons. And so there's this conflict. He's seeking to suppress those a century-old aspiration for freedom that's characterized Ukrainian people for centuries, actually.
So they are significantly different. The psyche there is different from, say, the psyche of an average Russian.
Yes. It's like, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but it's like there are Canadians, there are people that live in the United States, there are people that live in Ireland, in Great Britain. In some ways, we have common history. We share some similar language. We have some same values. But we're not the same. You know, there's a big difference between an American and a Canadian or an Irishman.
Mm-hmm.
Belarusians, Russians, Ukrainians, they're similar. They're Slavic people. But they're very different in some significant ways. And it's the differences that make Ukrainians Ukrainian and not Belarusian and Russian that people are seeking to preserve and enhance in their country. And these values are at odds with the values that make Russians Russians and not Ukrainians. That's complicated. But they look the same. They share some similar history, absolutely. But down deep, the DNA is different.
Do you think that they are comfortable killing each other? Do you think that the Russian soldiers are comfortable coming in and actually killing the Ukrainians right now?
I don't know. It would be hard for me to think that in their souls they're comfortable doing this. But they serve in a system where they don't have that kind of choice.
Right.
And I think the ferocity with which Ukrainians have risen up to defend their land, their culture, their language, their history, their future, their children, their lives. They're fighting because they're defending their motherland. Russian soldiers that are coming because this is Putin's war. I don't think it's really even the war of the Russian people. Many of Russian and Ukrainian people are related to each other. They have this common history. But Mr. Putin can't accept the distinctiveness of Ukrainian society and its culture, and he's seeking to suppress it. And I think, Dan, honestly, that Mr. Putin is terrified that what Ukrainians have aspired to for well over a century will spill over into Russia, and it will inflame Russian people to aspire to the same things, and he can't allow that to happen and stay in power at the same time.
So you stay on the offense. I see. Putin, right? So Putin stays on the offense.
Yeah, it's hard to predict the end game. How does this end for him? Because more and more, I'm stunned, actually, after visiting Russia a handful of times over the years and being in Ukraine since 1998, hundreds of times, I'm stunned that the people that live in such a controlled, repressive society as Russia is today have found the courage to begin to protest and risk saying to their government, this isn't right. This must stop.
Yeah, I could ask you so many questions, Bill. Let me get to what we're seeing right now in Ukraine.
Okay.
Do the Ukrainians have guns like we do? I mean, probably not like we do, but I mean, is it reasonable to think that that this is real news coming out of Kyiv now and other cities where they're taking up arms and they're taking to the streets?
Now, they have those weapons now, but in my experience visiting and living in Ukraine, not permanently, but visiting many, many times, like I said, they're not a gun-like culture. Some people like to hunt. There were some gun shops I saw, but not like here.
Okay.
So the gun ownership up until now wasn't like it is in the United States. To be honest with you, I never knew a private person that owned their own gun. Maybe they did, and I didn't know it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's because of this conflict and their desperation. The women and children can leave the country, but men 18 to 60 must stay and fight for their motherland because their life is now on the line.
How passionate, how committed,
civilization.
How committed do you think they are as individuals?
1,000%. And that's why eventually they will prevail. It may take them generations, but they will never accept Mr. Putin's agenda for their country. They will never accept it.
Do you see a role for NATO or for the United States beyond what we're doing? Just out of curiosity?
That's a really good question. I'm not a military strategist, and I don't want to get in the weeds of politics, partisan politics here. But I will say that we need to keep doing what we're doing and intensify our support for Ukraine. I don't think they're asking us to come and fight their battle for them, but they're asking for supplies, for resources to fight back against a much superior. It's David and Goliath.
Yeah.
And right now they got one stone in their sling and they want a few more.
And that's what they're calling it. Can I maybe a final question for our conversation today,
yes,
Bill,
sir.
Anyway, and that would be how can I put this gently? Why weren't the Ukrainians preparing better for this? Why weren't they learning, you know, why weren't they getting ready to better defend their country? Why? And even in the past month, right, we heard that even they were,
right,
you know, they weren't even realizing what was happening here. And all of a sudden it's a shock to them, so now they want everybody's help. They could have been spending the past several months, you know, getting ready.
It's a good question. I think they began, go back 7 or 8 years, the former president of Ukraine, Viktor Yanukovych, was Putin's man. He was his puppet. And he raped financially Ukraine of billions and billions of dollars. He took out of the treasury of Ukraine and put in other places. And he impoverished the nation financially so it couldn't develop its military.
Mm.
So they had no chance to fight back when Putin took Crimea without a shot and engaged in this proxy war in eastern Ukraine that continues to this day. But once they realized what Putin was capable of, they began to build themselves up. And they began to get some assistance from the West, from the United States, and advising and training. So their military today is vastly improved over it was 7 or 8 years ago when this thing started in 2013, 2014. Mm. But they're still not a match for for Russia's military.
That's
who
problem.
Is, except
right,
maybe the United States or China.
Bill, well,
so they've had a lot of catching up to do, but you can't deny their passion.
Okay.
And what this is about for them, I'm sorry I'm taking too long, they love what we love. They love freedom.
Well, they're going to have to fight for it,
it's
it looks
hard
like.
Hard not to root for an underdog.
Yeah, right. Well, we're rooting for them, that's for sure. Bill, thank you. Amen. I'm sorry that I'm sure you have lots of friends over there.
I do.
And sorry that you have to go through this, but we appreciate that. We may seek you out here as this thing continues, if that's okay, sir.
And if your station ever gets calls from people about how could they help, like humanitarian assistance.
Yeah.
I could be of help to you in giving you some guidance on how they could direct their support in a really meaningful way with integrity. But that's for another time.
Okay, and think about that, put that together, and we'll connect with you again soon, Bill. Thank you so much.
I would love that. Thank you.
All
God
right.
bless you all. Thank you.
God bless you. Thank you. Bill, a missionary in Ukraine for many, many years, getting kind of into the insight and thought process of the Ukrainians and why they're in this situation. Wow. 325, this is KNSI's Ox in the Afternoon.